This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening and welcome to Love Sport London. This is the Charlton Fan Show. Miles Blumstone here, joined by the team from the SE7 podcast. Paul Sullivan, Rob Sullivan, two Sullivans doubling up. I don't know how we're going to cope, Ollie.
Too many Sullivans.
And Ollie Cook. It's a family affair tonight. Great win on Saturday. Incredible. 2-1 against Barnsley. Lyle Taylor and Andre Green with the goals. There's not much more you can ask for from a relegation scrap, is there, than a win to keep you up, keep your head well above the parapet. It was a needed result. It was a six-pointer, and Charlton have come out on top. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it was the proverbial two halves, because after that first half, I said to Rob downstairs in the concourse, probably one of the worst teams we've been playing this season. Of course, I was spectacularly proved wrong in the second half, because Barnsley were all over us. They hit the woodwork three times in total. They forced out Dylan Phillips to make a Gordon Banks-esque save.
Oh, it was amazing.
It was superb, wasn't it? And it was squeaky bottom time towards the end there. We were all getting a bit worried. And the way I try and relieve the stress, I even started singing in the lower West End.
Which is unheard of.
Unheard of, because it's a library normally.
What did you think of the game? Were you enjoying it? Because I know that when they're tense, you feel it, you live it, you feel every single emotion that you can possibly feel. But at the same time, it feels that much better, I feel like, when you get across the line, that relief, isn't it?
Well, I tell you what, Miles, it reminded me of Alan Kershley days, when we used to go 1-0 up and then just defend it for the rest of the game. And that's how I learnt to enjoy Charlton. We go ahead and then defend the hell out of it. And that really what happened in this game was the first half, we blew them out of the water. We were much the better side. Then we took off Lyle Taylor, we took off Johnny Williams, and that's really where it changed. We looked like a different team coming out. And we really hanged on that game. But it was really, really good to see. Really satisfying at the end when we got that victory. But I wish it was a bit more comfortable than that little bit of a nervy 2-1.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Ollie. I think it was the substitutions that changed it. Unfortunately, in theory, those substitutions looked solid. Yeah. Because you think you're 2-0 up. Taylor himself said after the game that his legs were gone. He was cramping up, so he had to come off. Williams was feeling the strain of being hacked, a few times in that first half. So, yeah, theory, you thought, yeah, you see out the game at 2-0 and Forster Kaski came on and Hemed. And actually, unfortunately, Forster Kaski, for me, looks a yard off the pace. I think that they were playing through him quite easily. Barnsley took the upper hand and got their goal. And fortunately, we just did enough to see it out. But, yeah, one of those games where you see the game swing back in favour of the opposition and all of the momentum that went with it.
You just mentioned Johnny Williams coming off because he'd been hacked a few times. Is that going to be something that we're going to see throughout his tenure at Charlton? His career has been blighted by injuries. I watched the Sunderland Till I Die documentary on Netflix, and it just looked like an awful time for him. When he does get a few big tackles, is there always going to be that risk? Is he always a player that will get taken off just to protect him?
All the time. And I think he's, and one or two other players, they're particularly
susceptible.
They go for him, and there were some big units in that Barnsley side on Saturday, and they were just going for the likes of Johnny Williams, and he kind of invites it as well, the way he plays. But just getting back to the substitutions, do you think, Rob, Ollie, that there was a case, that was a chance then just to up the ante and perhaps bring on McGeady to replace Williams?
Yeah, it's a good point. So I'm interested to see how McGeady will fit in. I'm interested to see how he'll get on, because he's not played too much for Sunderland this season. He was really good for them last season, but we just want to see how he fits in with the Charlton team. But I don't know how much of an influence he would have had coming on, because obviously established and good players, Williams and Taylor, on the pitch, they made the huge difference. Them coming off was always going to have effect. Even if you brought on McGeady, I don't think it would have stopped what happened. So whether you know, Taylor and Williams are on the pitch or not, it is the difference whether Charlton's going to be looking attacking and threatening or not.
Yeah, I mean, I felt, obviously, Bowyer knows what he's doing, hands down.
Yeah, with his sub,
but it just, for me, it just, for some reason, the game seemed to change on the substitutions. Mm. And, you know, Hemed, fair play to him. When he first came, he looked a little bit on the heavy side, and he looks like he shed some weight and he's worked hard to get his fitness because he came with an injury. And I think he's been working hard running for the team since he's come in. Forster Caskey, we know, has also come back off the long, long injury as well. And it just, I think we lost our shape a bit. And I think, you know, personally, I would have maybe liked to see McGeady come on for Williams because they're more like for like. But Bowyer obviously made the tactical decision to go with a more, I'd say, defensive setup.
Yeah, I think possibly Bowyer is sort of caught between a rock and a hard place because obviously he wants to get the minutes in, get Forster Caskey, the likes of him and Hemed, get some play into him because obviously there's a lot of games coming up. So it is a real balancing situation now with an abundance of players at our disposal. And I never thought we'd be saying that this season for Charlton.
Well, two players that might not be at the disposal of Charlton at the end of the season are, of course, the goal scorers. Lyle Taylor looking to run down his contract. Mm. Andre Green only in on loan. Is it a little bit of a worry that these key players might be leaving because they are key players and they are creating those moments? Andre Green's in great form at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, when Andre Green came in, we all assumed it was a Lecco like for like, but I've got to say he's a much better player than Lecco. Mm. His decision making is a lot better. You can see he's got Premier League quality in him, so he probably will be playing for Aston Villa in the not too distant future. So the likelihood of holding on to him is pretty low. But Lyle Taylor, yeah, at the end of the season, we'll have to see how it goes because he's having conversations every day with Lee Bowie, I'm assuming. And he's understanding, he's getting older, and the big move that he's hoping for might not happen. So there is chance that we'll hold on to him. But then again, he did run out his contract with Wimbledon where he was loved. So it's hard to predict.
It's a risk that they're two of your most key players and they could both leave on a free. Well, when I say leave on a free, Lyle Taylor running down his contract, Andre Green going back from a loan spell. Generally, when your top players leave, you want to get that cash in for them so that you can reinvest in the squad.
Yes, but I think, obviously, in context of the rest of the season and transfer deadline day, the price of relegation versus how much money we could have possibly got for Taylor, given the fact he's only got 6 months left on his contract, I think the chairman and the new owners made the right decision because Taylor, if we can get him come back fully fit between now, he's such a class player. He really will deliver for us.
Oh, yeah. I mean. And for me, the clock ticking over 11 o'clock on Friday night to retain Taylor, that to me, along with the Bowyer signing his new contract, by the way, that they were the key, you know, facets for me in this transfer window. Mm. So to keep Taylor, and I'm really only interested in the here and now because we've just got to survive this season and then we're assess the situation come May.
And the thing about Lyle Taylor is no one can question his attitude. I mean, you could question his attitude letting his contract run down and not pushing for a move, but when he gets on that pitch, when he crosses that white line, he gives everything for the club. He's still scoring goals. That's all you can really ask for, whether he wants to run down his contract and get a move or not.
100%. When he's on the pitch, he's making a difference. Absolutely making a difference. And he's the sort of player that if he didn't play for you, you'd hate him. And that's the sort of player that we absolutely love.
He had the Barnsley fans in raptures, didn't he? And how angry they were when he went off and waved to them. Because, look, I'm the same as you, Ollie. I don't begrudge him a move because I think every time he's taken to the pitch and put the Charlton shirt on, 110%, without doubt, class player. If he goes, good luck to him. Thank you for his time, but I'd love to see him stay.
And I actually saw a change in his body language, I don't know about you, on Saturday, because I think, you know, with all the speculation surrounding him, he's been a little bit funny, a little bit reserved in recent weeks when he came back from his injury. But I felt that he was ready for it on Saturday and a cloud had been lifted. And I think he's here with us for the cause. Yeah. And as I say, he's back to his mischievous best. I mean, he was in that 6-yard area in front of all the Barnsley fans, giving it, you know, he was really winding them up. And as Rob said, when he got substituted in the second half, he waved to all four sides of the ground, including the Barnsley fans. It was great to see. Great to see.
How many goals has he got in him for the rest of the season, do you think?
It's hard to tell, because when he started, he scored pretty much every game. Mm. And every time he plays, he looks like he can make a difference. He looks like he can score goals, even in games where he hadn't. So I think he's got another 10 goals in this season.
That's
definitely
a good shout. I think so. Yeah,
definitely. I think even with the only, he's only played 15 games this season, or 15 appearances.
Is he on eight?
He's on eight, so he's doing roughly one in two. And the goal he scored on Saturday, I don't think he's got enough credit for that goal, because he really anticipated beautifully just to knock that past the defender to get it past the keeper. It was, for me, a wonderful goal. You know, great anticipation by Taylor there. Mm.
4 points clear now. Is it just about, especially with a win against Barnsley, who look all but down? Barnsley and Luton look like they're going to go. So realistically, we're talking finishing above one of Wigan, Stoke and Huddersfield. Are we just about there?
Yeah, and I also think typically there's always possibly one that will fall from the middle. And if I was a Queen's Park Rangers fan, I'd be a little bit worried.
Yeah,
they could go into a bad sort of free fall. Obviously, the likes of Birmingham, they've got to watch themselves. So there could be another one who could be dragged into it.
Leeds.
Interesting concept.
I would love that.
The old Leeds choke.
Leeds wobble really is all the way down. It's not just the 4 points, it's having those two teams in between as well, having Huddersfield and Stoke. I know they're good sides, they're sides that have definitely much improved. The Cowley brothers done fantastic at Huddersfield, but them losing again at the weekend. Stoke up next, which we'll talk about a bit later on, but having not just 4 points, but two clubs in between yourselves and relegation, that must be just a little bit relieving.
Yeah, it was, although we were disappointed getting that news from Ellen Road that Wigan typically are beating Leeds. Couldn't believe it.
Can't they just lose every game? Can't they do anything right?
I know, but that's football, and that's the beauty of football, isn't it? So, basically, there was no change from before the kickoff. We were only 4 points clear, but we've got, as you say, Miles, we've got that great gap now of 9 points between us and Barnsley and Luton.
Mm, yeah, well, 4 points clear, and as long as you're beating the teams around you, they're not going to go above you. That's the main. These are the games that you absolutely have to win. Up next, quite exciting, we're going to be talking to Benji Murick, who is a sports journalist for Charlton. He's done some really, really interesting articles that we want to go through. We're just coming up to 7:15. If you're a Newcastle fan, head over to Love Sport Radio, where Charlie Hawkins is hosting the Newcastle Fan Show. This, of course, is the Charlton Fan Show on Love Sport London.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Charlton Fan Show on Love Sport London. Miles Blumsome here with the SE7 podcast. We've got Paul Sullivan, Rob Sullivan and, of course, Ollie Cook. And we're quite excited to be joined on the line at the moment by Benji Murick. He is a sports journalist for Charlton Football Club. Benji, welcome to the Charlton Fan Show. How are you today?
Thank you. Great to be here. Excited to get into it a little bit.
Now, you might, Londoners, be noticing a slightly different accent to what we see round the mean streets. But he's, of course, from across the pond from the United States, from America. Benji, why Charlton? What made you choose Charlton to be your club?
So it's a little bit coincidence, a little bit just the way life takes you. But I grew up a fanatical supporter of a London club. I'm not going to say
keep it to yourself, Benji.
Not Millwall, not Palace, but a different London club.
That's all right.
And then I moved to London last September to study here at uni, and essentially I was looking for experience, and I emailed all the clubs in London trying to find some experience, and Charlton were the only club who were kind enough to respond and invite me in. So I came in one day, wrote some stuff for the website, and essentially have refused to leave ever since.
Benji, welcome to the club. It's good to have you on the show. You've arrived at a very interesting time, based on the takeover and everything. And because I think there's a really feel-good factor at the moment that we can pick up on, and obviously you're involved in the club and the day-to-day, and you see it from the work you do with the comms team. What has been what has been your take on it since ESI have kind of taken over?
So I first started coming in last March, and obviously that was at a very exciting time for the club. Despite the ownership troubles, that the fantastic back end of last season was just filled with so much excitement and positivity for what could be come in the future. And then obviously becoming a championship club again and then having the takeover, there's just a lot of fuel added to that and a lot of people feeling that this club can go very far because it's got such a strong base, whether that be the supporters, which is such a strong fan base, whether it be the academy, which is continuously producing such a high level of player and such a consistent large groups of players. So you've got such a strong base for the club already. And then with new ownership, I guess the hope is that the little pieces that were missing can now be added in. I think there around the club, there's just a lot of excitement for what the unknown could bring, because previously the unknown was kind of a dull, almost scary unknown. Whereas now there's still unknown. We still don't know what's going to happen in the next year. Who knows what, where the club will be in a year's time. But that same unknown is a much more exciting prospect than it was a year ago, and much more positivity everywhere around the club. And that's definitely been something I've been able to see within the day-to-day inside the club and also within the fan base. Obviously, we see the attendances are surging at the moment, and everyone seems like they're into it and in it together, which is really what you need in a football club.
Yeah, hi Benji. I was actually reading an article that you wrote a bit about the Charlton supporters and, you know, the attitude they have. Just from an outsider looking in, you look at Charlton's results, 16-odd games without a win, really terrible, terrible run for most teams, including us. But no one really ever called for Lee Bowyer's head, which is really unique, I suppose, for Charlton Athletic. So why do you think it was a little bit different with Bowyer and the Charlton fans?
I think from what I can see, it's been a combination of factors. The first being the really strong start to the season gave a little bit of breathing room and a little bit of room for error, I guess, where that bad run was able to be coped with because there were so many points on the board already. And then I think there's an understanding within all parts of the club that this last three-month period was pretty much impossible for Lee Bowyer, whether it be with the injuries, with the when a player would come back, then another player would get injured, and if any players came back, then the next ones would get injured, and he'd have to be playing players for 90-plus minutes who could only last 45, 60 minutes. So the job has just been so unbelievably challenging, and I think Charlton supporters, I think they understand that, and I think a big part of that is the connection between the club and the supporters and Bowyer, where people are willing to back him and they're willing to see where he can take the club because they trust that he has the club's best interests at heart, and that's pretty easy to tell with the way he speaks. It's pretty easy to tell with the actions that he does, especially the intense honesty in pretty much all of his conversations with the media, with supporters, with players, makes a huge difference because there's reason to believe what he says because he has a track record of constantly telling the truth, and he has a track record of being a reliable person and a reliable representative for the club. And I think supporters of Charlton really understand that because after seeing the club go through so many ups and downs over the last 10, 20, 30, 40 years, what is so desperately wanted is people that are going to represent the club in the best light. And Lee Bowyer is definitely someone who does that. And he's talked about it in terms of how he's interacted with his players, where he's always going to tell them exactly what he's thinking. He's talked about in the way he's interacted with supporters, where he pretty much always says exactly what's on his mind. And I think supporters really connect with that. And it's been a big part of his reign so far and will almost certainly be a big part going forward.
Yeah, hi, Benji. It's Paul here. How you doing?
I'm good. Good to hear from you.
Good. Now, Benji, you've been a lucky mascot so far. I mean, you say you're coming in last March. Obviously, we had the playoff final. And now, as you know, all the Charlton fans are relieved with this takeover. So stick around as long as you can, mate.
I'll do my best.
So basically what I'd like to do now, Benji, is maybe sort of hype you up a little bit because I've been, as Ollie alluded to, we've really enjoyed. There's been a couple of articles that you've brought out, and if you could point people in the direction how they can read these after the show. But the underlying feature of your article is that you tend to sort of look at trends, and obviously in your last article you were looking at how supporters have played such a massive part in helping Charlton being the 12th man. And just sort of talk us through these couple of articles that have come out over the last few weeks.
Yeah, so the most recent one, which I wrote after Barnsley, which we all know is such an incredible atmosphere and really seemed to help, but Boyer has spoken so many times, pretty much in all of his press conferences, he speaks about the supporters and he speaks about how he believes that they're helping the team and how he believes that the team wouldn't be able to perform to the same level without the supporters. And it's clearly a real central tenet of what he believes is his job at the club. It's to create this connection between the players and the supporters so that the players can then get this help from the supporters. And so I was curious as to how that would actually look concretely in terms of the results. And immediately as I started looking at it, a major trend cropped up, which is that when the attendance has been at its best, has also been coincidentally when Charlton has been winning the most games. And the statistics are fairly black and white, which is kind of incredible for something as sort of bizarre as this and something so gray as this, where the supporters shouldn't necessarily be particularly contributing as much as they are. But in the six games that Charlton have won at the Valley this season, the average attendance has been 18,961. And in the five draws and five defeats, it's been under 17,000. And that gap of almost 2,000 is pretty considerable. And it's just quite incredible that it's made such a big difference in terms of the actual results. And so after QPR, the 2-2, the late QPR draw in December, where it really seemed for a second that the wheels were starting to fall off, especially after that 2-2 draw the Friday night before with Hull, where you could tell the whole club was kind of down for a moment because that was such a sickener after not having won for such a long time. And you could see on Bowyer's face after that QPR game that he wasn't just playing a game. He wasn't making something up when he talked about the support, and he came out with his great line about telling supporters to keep banging on the drum because he really felt it was helping. And that intense belief, I think, is what probably makes the support this season, or one of the reasons that makes the support this season so strong, because everyone knows that they're being believed in, and supporters know that when they go to a match that there is an actual difference and that the club is feeling the difference from those supporters. So I just wanted to look into that a little bit more and kind of look at some reasons for that and look at the statistics for that. And the conclusions are rather remarkable, because it really shows that the greater the turnout at the Valley, the better the team on the pitch plays.
Yeah, Benji, I think as a fan, it was a real superb piece of writing. It was really authentic on your part as well. So you've obviously tapped into, I think you captured the mood of the club to be able to talk us through that journey when things were going against us with all of the injuries and how hard, you know, you put it into the article really well about how hard it must have been for Bowyer to pick the team up after the whole result that following on from the Huddersfield game just before that. I mean, for someone that doesn't supports another London club, you've done that very, very well. So have you picked that up from your time at the club as well, the kind of the closeness of the fans and the bond with Bowyer and the team, and how we've all had to kind of stand together in these last few months?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that was pretty palpable from the start when I came to the club. It's that the supporters were always, in some respect, positive, which is not something I've experienced looking at pretty much any other club, whereas Twitter will just be filled with toxicity. And for this fan base, I've been pretty impressed pretty much constantly with how there's a drive to try to make the environment around the club positive. And I think from what I can see, that may come from having so much negativity around the club due to whether it be stadium troubles, due to ownership troubles, whatever it is. So the positivity has to come from the supporters because it might not be coming from anywhere else. So I think the supporters have taken that on as being their responsibility. And, for example, in the transfer window over the last month, I know a lot of people were starting to get frustrated as they were seeing movement that they felt was a bit slow. But just from looking on Twitter, it seemed that there was a lot more patience and a lot more positivity than I've seen in pretty much any other club, especially any other club that was in a similar position where they weren't necessarily making the moves that the supporters wanted. And I know there was some deliberation on Twitter about whether people were being negative, but as someone who supports a different club and is coming from the outside, it seemed that there was just a lot more willingness to be patient and to trust and to just believe that things were going to work out. And as I was saying, I think that's, from what I can see, come from almost a necessity, where if the supporters aren't going to bring that positivity and aren't going to bring that electricity and aren't going to bring that excitement, then it may just not be present at the club at all times, because there hasn't always been a manager like Bowyer who is so exciting and so can and has such a strong connection to the supporters. And there hasn't obviously always been an ownership of the club like ESI who's trying to connect with supporters and trying to make it a more communal club, which it obviously has been over the last however long. So I think that necessity from the supporters is what has made this club's fan base so strong, and the fact that they've taken that charge, almost taken it on and wanted to go with it and wanted to have the responsibility of bringing that excitement and positivity to the club.
Benji, when you do head back to America, whether it's a holiday to see your family or if we lose your talents back there for good, will you be spreading the word of Charlton Athletic? You're going to be taking back some clothes for all your friends to wear, making sure that your town is full Charlton.
Yeah, I'll have to. Seattle has a pretty strong football following already, both kinds of football, with the Seahawks and the Sounders. But I'm going to be certainly spreading the Dylan Phillips propaganda everywhere.
Excellent.
Hey, Benji, thank you so much for taking the time out to join us this evening. Benji Murick, a sports journalist for Charlton FC. Really do check out some of his articles. Just search his name. They are absolutely fantastic. The one about the fans after the whole draw was wonderful. We've all had a read of that today. Really, really inspiring stuff. He seems to have just tapped into the culture of the club, and it's great to see someone coming from overseas. He did mention transfers and the transfer window in that last answer, which is a great segue for me, because next I want to talk about the end of the transfer window. It's 7:31. This is Love Sport London.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
7:34 on Love Sport London. Newcastle fans, changed that DAB radio or online over to Love Sport Radio, because Charlie Hawkins is hosting the Newcastle Fan Show for the next half an hour. We are doing the Charlton Fan Show here on Love Sport London. Charlton fans, if you do want to get in touch with us, the number is 0208 7020 558. You can call us. You can, of course, send us a message on WhatsApp or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Someone who has called the number 0208 7020 558, as he often does, is very, very good friend of the show, Ahmed. Ahmed, welcome again. Not welcome, just welcome back to the Charlton Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for hosting me. I appreciate that. And the guys too.
No, Ahmed.
What's on your mind today, mate?
Well, a number of things you were talking about the game particularly. Because I had it down as a sort of, it was a game of two halves, I think this is one of your colleagues said, but it wasn't really a game of two halves, it was a game of 70 minutes and 20 minutes. Because up until the 70th minute, we were positive, pulsating and passionate.
Very good.
For the last 20 minutes, when the wheels came off the wagon slightly, we were brave, ballsy and battling and making sure we got the 3 points.
And Ahmed, I think most of us agreed it was the kind of substitutions that turned it. Do you think the substitutions could have been different from Bowyer?
Yeah, I think he should have made different substitutions, because neither of them worked whatsoever. We actually went backwards when Williams and Taylor went off, our two best players, and Hemed and JFC came on. They made no impact at all.
What do you make of the son of Toma Hemed? We actually got him on permanent, haven't we?
He's a bit like the other chap, Kyron. It's not a criticism, but why are we signing players on loan who are injured? I don't understand that.
Yeah, and he's got pedigree at the level. You know, we know he can score goals, but we haven't quite seen it yet. Do you think he's going to come good this half the season, or do you think he's just going to be one of those players?
I'm hoping that Bo can do his magic act with him particularly, and perhaps somehow bring the best out of him that we haven't seen. That's all, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's working out how we can play to his strengths, because he has got goals at this level for QPR, Brighton. He got promoted with them. So, but yeah, I guess we haven't seen the best of him as yet. Ahmed, what did you think of the transfers we brought in?
Oh, I thought some very good business was done. My man of the match on Saturday was Andre Green. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And also, special commendation to Alfie Doty. He looked really, really threatening down the flanks, but he showed his inexperience when two or three times he could have tried to make the pass to Green to set him off one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and he didn't get his head up. He couldn't do it. And he's got to learn that one. I mean, that's something Bo's probably spotted that, and they're going to have to work on with him.
And Ahmed, just for the benefit of our new presenter, Miles, I don't think he's just picked up when you come on, you have your three words beginning with the same letter. So just remind him of what you came up with there, Ahmed.
Sorry, I said the first 70 minutes was positive, pulsating, passionate performance.
Hey, that's what we're for.
And then the last 20 minutes, it was a brave, ballsy, battling performance.
I'll have to remember that for next week, Ahmed.
I'm not sure I'm always going to be able to deliver, guys.
well, you've set yourself up now. You're going to have to. If you're calling this show, you've got to make sure you write some down and you get ready for it.
That's the problem.
Stoke on Saturday, Ahmed, what are you thinking? Easy win?
No. Not at all. That's going to be another... And listen, let's not get complacent about relegation after one win. We've got to play another couple of six-pointers in Stoke and Luton are coming up this month, yeah? We have to win those games, come what may.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you were talking about which team has been free fall. Let's be honest, guys, it's been us in the last 15, 17 games.
That's true. Mm. Yeah.
We've only had one win. I know it's fantastic performance and everything, but let's be fair as well. After we conceded that dreadful first goal, I think one of you guys said, for 20 minutes, what's the euphemistic phrase? We resolutely defended, which meant we just hung on for our dear lives.
Yeah, look, we need... I think more steel at the back. I think steel. We still look a bit shaky.
I'm surprised he didn't bring in a central defender, actually, because I thought he would for that very reason. Funny enough.
Yeah, I mean, on that, it was interesting. I think the deadline we'll go on to in a minute. The deadline day in the transfer window in January, but I felt after the clean sheet against Fulham, hopefully that tide was turning. But as you rightly said, when Barnsley got their goal, they looked capable of getting another. But I think that was very much to do with a kind of shift in momentum as well.
It was, because in the first half, they looked the team that everybody kept saying about how they were definitely doomed. They played like that. As you say, though, teams usually play a lot better after half-time once their managers have, you know, changed things around and said a few things and stuff like that. Because I turned to one of my friends who comes with me and I said, there's no way that Barnsley are going to play that bad in the second half, and I was proved right.
Ahmed, on Saturday, what do you think the score's going to be?
I'll take a draw, 1-1.
1-1. Thank you for calling the show, Ahmed. We'll speak to you next week, won't we?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, of course you will.
Same time.
Alright, thanks a lot, guys.
Sounds good. Ahmed there. Anyone else who wants to get in touch, Charlton fans, 0208 70 2558 is the number. We mentioned a few transfer signings there. The loan signings at the end of the window, Matt Smith, Aidan McGeady and David Davis. Guys, are you happy with those signings?
Yeah, overall. Obviously, you know, there'd be some fans out there were looking for permanent signings, but I'm a great believer. The January transfer window, I think I mentioned it last week, you're only looking to get players who are in who are better or at least equal to the ones you've already got in. And unfortunately, there are a lot of players out there who, for want of a better word, there's a lot of dross.
Mercenaries as well this time of the season.
That's the point. Yeah.
I mean, look, you can understand why, because there's a lot of money swimming around the game, but... You know, we saw what the Peterborough chairman, Darren McArthur, come out and said about
that
Maddison.
That was interesting, yeah.
You know, the offer that he got from us. And that is symptomatic of, I think, the whole of the January transfer window for all of the clubs. I personally am happy. I think it was good to see Matt Southall, the chairman's interaction on deadline day on Twitter with the fans. I think he may have raised a few expectations in how upbeat his tweets were based on who we thought we were potentially going to get in and being linked with. But ultimately, McGeady, class player, if we can get the best out of him. Birmingham fans were very unhappy that we've let David Davis go to us. Mm. And, you know, the lad at Man City, he's got, you know, he wouldn't be on Man City's books for any reason. So it should be good to see him come in and do something, hopefully.
Who are you most excited about?
Yeah, well, I mean, kind of on what Rob said there, at this level, sometimes you haven't heard of certain players and you're not sure about them. So I really go off on Twitter how how their fans react to it. And David Davis, their fans were livid that he went to us. So that's exciting for a starter. Aidan McGeady himself, we've seen, especially last season, and when he came on in the playoff final against us, everyone sort of held their breath a little bit because we know a difference he can make. He's a good player. He's played in the Premier League. He's been around for a while. He's a strong and skillful player. He's got a trick named after him and everything. So he's a good player. I'm excited to see how he fits in. He struggled with fitness sometimes recently, but it was a solid start. Matt Smith, a bit unknown at the moment. QPR don't seem too fussed that he's gone to us, it seems. He probably didn't get too much game time, but it'll be interesting to see what he adds to the team. I think it's more depth than anything else, but it will be interesting if he's as skillful a player as he's made out.
Yeah, I think you can take a few positives from the Matt Smith loan signing, because he's already accumulated about 7 or 8 appearances for the Wales full squad. So Ryan Giggs obviously must see quite a bit in him, and he's obviously gained a bit of experience. I think he got about 40 appearances out in Holland with 20 in Shader, and for whatever reason it didn't work out at QPR, but we're not going to let that put us off. By all accounts, Lee has come out this week and said he's a very quiet lad around the training ground, and he needs a bit of time to acclimatise. I mean, obviously, there's some big voices. He's got to deal with the likes of Bose, Jacko, Lowell Taylor, Aidan McGeady, you know. So he's probably just biding his time. But the one I'm really excited about, and I made that perfectly clear last week on the show, is McGeady. I know that the Sunderland fans are happy to wash their hands of him, because I was listening to the Sunderland fan show on Sunday night, which you hosted, Mark.
I did, I filled in.
There I was at 10:30 at night, or godforsaken hour.
You poor man. What are you doing listening to that?
Well, I'm just holding on to your every word, Mark.
Oh, thank you.
But I know the chap there was saying good riddance and glad to get... But he also said he thinks that he could do a good job for Charlton. And we all know what McGeady brought to the table last season. I mean, when he played at the Valley last January, Bowyer was waxing lyrical about him.
Paul, just real quickly, do you have some inside information when you made that prediction? Because I heard nothing about Aidan McGeady until you said it. Next thing you know, we've signed him.
I'd like to say I have, but he's just a player I honed in on from the very beginning of January. I just think he's a class player. Obviously, you know, he's got a few issues in the past. He even had the temerity to upset the Russians once or twice when he was playing for Spartak Moscow. So he's a very brave guy. And I actually was looking at him very closely. Once all the substitutions were made on Saturday, you could see in his face he was gutted that he wasn't able to get on, because I think he was dying to attack that covered end in that second half.
As you've said, and Bowyer was waxing lyrical about him after we drew with Sunderland last season. And I think I remember reading some of the comments on Charlton Life, the forum. I think people were saying they weren't the only ones that were nervous when he came on in the playoff final. You know, you expect things from him because you know he's got a shot on him. You know he's played at a very high level. I think Bowie is just the sort of player he could play on, just the sort of manager he could play under as well. I think Bowie has got a way about getting something out of that type of player, certainly.
I mean, Bowie being who he is, he knows a thing or two about some nasty players who've got a bit of attitude on them. So I think he's found himself a good place.
And with regard to the other acquisition, David Davis, quite like the look of him. He's got lots of championship experience with Birmingham. He had a bit of premiership experience way back with Wolves. But he's a very physical player. He mops up well in front of that back four. So I think he's the sort of player that we really need. And I do believe that when the going gets tough in games, he's the sort of player to have around, because he never knows when he's beaten.
Stoke on Saturday. Up next, we're going to talk to Martin Spinks from the Stoke Sentinel. Get the opposition view in what is a huge, huge game down towards the bottom of the Championship. 7:45, this is Love Sport London.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is.
Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station. The Opposition View on Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Charlton Fan Show on Love Sport London. Miles Plumsome here with the guys from the SE7 podcast, Paul Sullivan, Rob Sullivan and Ollie Cook. If you're just tuning in, one, where have you been? Two, if you have missed anything, look at your podcast providers overnight. Tomorrow morning, the show will, of course, go up. Stoke on Saturday, it's a very, very big game. Relegation six-pointer at the Bet365 Stadium. We're joined on the line by Martin Spinks from the Stoke Sentinel. Martin, welcome to the Charlton Fan Show.
Good evening. Sounds like I'm outnumbered a bit.
Just slightly. There's only four of us in here. Of course, I'm impartial. Of course I am. That's my job. Why would I not be? But how do you think the game's going to go this weekend?
Well, you said it's a big game, and the big advantage for Stoke, or us, as I should say, I suppose, in this show, is that we've been used to big games all season because Stoke have been down there, and obviously you've been dropping, haven't you? After a great start. So I'm hoping we're more battle-hardened, and certainly it's a better Stoke team than you would have seen a few weeks ago. That's the bad news for Charlton.
Yeah, kind of on that point, I think we all expected Stoke to do really well this season, made a few big signings, some familiar signings as well in the summer. But when we did play you at the beginning of the season, you know, it wasn't really much of a contest. Charlton were a better team, and you had a real struggle at the start of the season. What's that down to? Like, obviously, it's getting a bit better now, but why did it start so poorly?
It was a poor start. 1 point from the first six games, I think it was, and that was the second game of the season, wasn't it, down at the Valley? obviously, Nathan Jones was the manager then, and it just didn't click under him. He came in January last year, had time to look at things pre-season, brought 10 players in, which proved far too many in the end, and he fell into the trap of chopping and changing the team too much when they couldn't get results, and it just spiralled out of control in the end, I'm afraid. And he would have gone sooner, but for the loyalty of the owners, who aren't—they're not a sacking club—and they pledged a lot of faith in him. And he got one or two results just when he needed them. But in the end, they just couldn't go on. And in fact, his very last game was at Millwall, just down the road from you, at the end of October. Michael O'Neill's come in and made a few changes. He's tinkered. He's not ripped it up. He's tinkered, but tinkered very sensibly. And I think you can see the outcome in the results.
Yeah, and I think, personally, just looking at it from a kind of, you know, just observing as a Charlton fan, I just think there's too much quality in that team for them to be down there where they are, some of the players you got there. So, like you say, it was probably a bit of tinkering on O'Neill's part to turn it round. I mean, I guess you had that heavy defeat against Derby the other week, didn't you? What do you think? I guess you must see this as a game you've got to win, really, from a Stoke's point of view.
Yeah, they've had a good January. In fact, he's been nominated for Manager of the Month, which is just, you know, unheard of in these parts in recent times. They've taken 10 points out of 12 and then 10 out of 15 in the end because of that defeat at Derby on the last day of the month. We're hoping that's an aberration, and it's the sort of result you can get when a team has been so poor, they've turned it around, but they're not going to turn it around 100%. They're going to have blips, and that's what we're hoping that was at Pride Park. It's a big week. They've got Charlton at home Saturday and then Preston at home next Wednesday before going to QPR. So they've really got to pick up some serious points from these two home games and pull away again. They were 7 points clear of the bottom three. We all drew a sigh of relief, not thinking they were out of it, but thinking, yeah, they really have turned the corner now. Suddenly they lose at Derby and Wigan, win a couple of games, and that gets down to 2 points. And obviously you're in the mix as well, which is good news for us. We've got to try and drag you in there along with the likes of Huddersfield.
A couple of new boys through the door at the end of the transfer window, a mixture of youth and experience. James Chester on loan from Aston Villa will bring experience at centre-half of both the Premier League and, of course, the Championship. And youngster from Tottenham, Tashaan Oakley-Booth, sort of unknown, but he was highly regarded within the Spurs academy. Are you excited about these players coming in?
Yeah, the Oakley Booth one is obviously more long-term. He's still a teenager, isn't he, with very little experience. And if we get anything out of him this season, I think that has to be seen as a bonus. Chester's come in because the manager's worried about the centre of his defence. Before the Derby game, there were no worries about the two players out there, Liam Lindsay and Danny Bart. but very little cover. He doesn't fancy Bruno Martins Indy there, who's been playing left back. And skipper Ryan Shawcross has made two comebacks from his broken leg and broken down on each occasion. And he's still out at the moment. So he's brought James Chester in until the end of the season as cover, essentially, but also a chance to look at him because he's out of contract and that may well become a permanent deal if he does well. But I have to say, defensively until Pride Park, and even then, if you're being really kind, you can say it's one of those nights where everything Derby hit went into the top corner. Jack Butland was helpless on all four occasions, and he's one of many experienced players, along with the likes of Joe Allen in midfield, who've come back to something like their best form. They're not quite there yet, but they're certainly getting there. And there's no doubt that the man management of Michael O'Neill and his tactics on the pitch have contributed enormously to that.
Yeah, Martin, just a quick glance at your lineup against Derby. I noticed there was no Jordan Cousins. I don't know if he's injured or dropped. I mean, what sort of impact has he made? Because obviously we like to keep a check on ex-Charlton players.
Yeah, he was one that Nathan Jones really pinned his colours to because he knew him from his Charlton days. He was a youth team player, though, wasn't he, under Nathan? Mm. And he brought him in on a free from QPR. And I felt sorry for him because he made his debut in the first game at home to QPR, as it happened, and then he dropped him for the game at Charlton. Now, you know, that, I'm afraid, was a symptom of the selection policy under Nathan Jones this season, the chopping and changing. What that did for Cousins' confidence at that time, I really don't know. Surely you've got to back him at Charlton, going back to his old club, to put in a performance. But he dropped him, and he's been in and out of the team really all season. He was playing as a holding midfielder, but then Michael O'Neill changed things on New Year's Day at Huddersfield. They had been playing 4-3-3, which is his favoured system. He then changed it to, if you like, a 4-2-3-1. That's to accommodate Nick Powell in the sort of number 10 position. And I'm afraid Jordan Cousins was booted out. He didn't want that holding, that essentially holding midfielder. And Cousins has been on the bench ever since. Come on a few times, but I'm afraid at the moment he's just a stopgap.
Martin, before we let you go, can you give us a score prediction for the weekend?
I've got to be bold. I've got to assume there's going to be a good reaction from Pride Park on Friday night. So I've got to go home when I have my chaps. Sorry, I'm going to duck. Thank God you're a long way away. I'll give you a goal, though. I'll say 2-1.
Well, oh, no. Thanks for the goal. Thanks for the goal, Martin. Thank you for joining the show. Martin Spinks there from the Stoke Sentinel. Just quickly, what do we think the score's going to be, Paul?
I think there'll be a lot of goals in this. I'm going to go for a 3-3.
Oh, good game.
Yeah. That's a great game, Rob.
We haven't won away since Reading, have we?
No. But we've got our boys back now, haven't we?
Yeah, I would love to say we can go and get a result. 2-0 Charlton.
Great, Ollie.
Yeah, well, Stoker, they've got really good players. They're on the ascendancy now. They're coming back and, you know, we've still got some injured players. So I'm going to say it's only going to be 3-0 Charlton.
Fantastic. And then Tuesday, another away day, trip to Nottingham Forest. This is a tough game. Nottingham Forest absolutely flying, going under the radar as promotion candidates. Can Charlton get anything out of this game?
Well, I think so, because one of our best performances of the season, certainly in that first half, we put in a wonder show against Forest at the Valley early in the season. And don't forget, we do raise our game against the so-called big teams. So, and I think the way Forest set up, when they play the likes of Brentford, who they've now done the double over, I think at Griffin Park the other night, they sort of sit back, just suck it all in, the threat from the BMW boys, and then they just got them on the counter-attack. That won't be the same at Charlton. I think it'll be a bit of cat and mouse. And I've got high hopes for City Ground. Listen, Lee Bowyer thinks we're going to get in the playoffs.
What do you think the score's going to be then?
Oh, the score. I'll go for 1-0 Charlton on that one.
1-0 Charlton. Do you guys think Charlton can win as well?
I was just thinking about when they came to the Valley. That was the best first half football I've seen Charlton play for many, many years. So if we just do the same again, yeah, we'll win.
Yeah, I struggle to think more than a game ahead because I think I'm going to go for 1-1.
One okay. All. Yeah. Great. Well, that's all we got time for on the Charlton Fan Show this week. Thank you very much to the guys from the SE7 podcast, Paul Sullivan, Rob Sullivan and Ollie Cook. We'll be back same time next week, 7 o'clock every Wednesday. So make sure you set an alarm for 5 to 7 so you've got time to get comfortable and start to listen to the show. Miles Blumsome here. Up next on Love Sport London, we'll be doing the Crystal Palace Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.